There have been a lot of promises made to the people of Grassy Narrows First Nation up in northwestern Ontario. But even as the provincial government said that it was working together with the First Nation on land rights and environmental contamination, it was drafting plans to clear-cut their land, according to the community, without their consent. As of tomorrow, the Whiskey Jack Forest Management Plan enters its final stages, and this plan would extend logging rights for 10 years in an area that now includes Grassy Narrows land. Simon Phobister is chief of the Grassy Narrows First Nation. We reached him in Toronto.
Chief Phobister, have you been consulted about the plans to further log Grassy Narrows?
Well, the thing is, we entered into an MOU with the Government of Ontario, and we've been at talks for 5 years and trying to resolve, you know, the issues about clear-cutting. And there's another parallel process that the Ministry of Natural Resources are involved with. And we've been very concerned with some of the plans that they've drafted up. It's going to call for more clear-cuts, and they want to extract more wood fiber from our traditional territory.
So suffice it to say, you've made it clear to them that you don't want this next 10 years of
no,
clear-cutting and
grassy
narrows.
Absolutely not. It's unacceptable because the wood fiber they want to take out is just unsustainable.
How extensive is the area of the forest around Grassy Narrows that's planning to log in the next 10 years?
Well, it covers most of where our trap lines are. It's quite extensive area, but we've been trying to talk to them, saying that, you know, we're against bad logging. We're not against logging, but we're against bad logging. And the plans that they've drafted up for the removal of the amount of wood fiber is just not acceptable. It's just going to increase the clear cuts that are already there.
Now, in 2011, you had an Ontario Superior Court decision in your favor that said that the logging shouldn't impinge upon your traditions and on your territory. But there was no injunction against logging at that time, was there?
There was a lower court ruling that was in our favor. However, the Court of Appeal, the three judges, they overturned the decision that was made by Justice Sanderson, and we appealed that. We appealed that to, we asked for leave to appeal the Supreme Court of Canada. Then now we'll be presenting our case to the Supreme Court.
But you also had a visit from the Premier, Kathleen Wynne, last year. She said, she was Minister of Aboriginal Affairs.
That's
then.
Right.
What did she promise you at that time?
Well, she said to our community members that she's going to make it right this time. And of course, she wasn't premier, and now she is. And I hope that she'll keep her promise.
And what did she promise? Could you tell us?
Well, she didn't. She wasn't very specific as to what she would do. But the impression we received is that our community was going to be properly, you know, consulted and accommodated, you know, and that our issues were going to be dealt with. But however, we have written a letter to her, and we'll be sending her a letter indicating that we totally reject the forestry management planning that the Ministry of Natural Resources have undertaken and are going to try to implement. And we totally reject that, and we made it very clear to Premier Wynne that, you know, that was totally unacceptable to us.
Can you tell us what effect you believe that these next 10 years of forestry in that area, what effect it's going to have on the people who live there?
Well, it's whatever mature timber is still left, you know, that's going to be gone. And not only that, the clear cuts contribute to leaching of mercury into the watershed. And, you know, I'm not a scientist, but what we were told was that there's bacteria that will turn that mercury into methyl mercury, which, you know, we already have, you know, 12 tons of methyl mercury in the river sediment already. And that has not even been cleaned up by the Ontario government. And this is going to be our another demand, is that, you know, there has to be an environmental cleanup of this methyl mercury. We can't live with it, you know, for decades or even centuries. We just want to get on with life. We want to, get back to commercial fishing. That's happened in Japan. And the government and industry, they contained, they put a cement pad over, you know, the where the mercury was. And decades later, you know, like, it's clean again. And they have commercial fishing again.
Chief Obister, how much of that legacy, the legacy of Grassy Narrows and the Minamata disease that came from those neurotoxins and decades ago, that was from the Dryden pulp and paper mill, how much of that is that legacy contributes to your concerns about, and perhaps or even your skepticism about, what the government plans for the region?
Well, the thing is, you know, the leaching of mercury from clear cutting is just going to definitely compound the problem, which is, you know, there's already methyl mercury in the river sediment, and it's just creating effects that are devastating to our community. Our community is bankrupt. Our traditional economy is gone. The mercury has affected us, you know, emotionally and physically. Our people are getting more ill. And we just can't live that way anymore. We need to see. We're just dealing with the government is only dealing with the effects. They're not dealing with the cause. And the cause is deposits of mercury in the river system. It needs to be cleaned up. So this would never be allowed anywhere else in this country. We've seen, you know, the derailment in Quebec. The city that was half of the business district was destroyed, and people died, unfortunately. And there was an immediate cleanup. And you know, why is this different? Why are we different? How come we have to bear all the costs? You know, the environmental, the even, you know, like physically, where our people are getting sick from mercury poisoning, Minamata disease. When is this going to end?
Chief Obister, we hear you, and I thank you for speaking with us tonight.
Okay. Bye-bye. Amina.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Simon Fobister is the chief of the Grassy Narrows First Nation. We reached him tonight in Toronto. Shocking. That is how a Manitoba mother describes today's court decision to give Mark Grant a new trial. In 2011, Mr. Grant was convicted of second-degree murder in the death of 13-year-old Candace Dirksen. Candace Dirksen had disappeared while walking home from school in 1984. It would be weeks before her body was found. She was frozen to death, tied up in a shed. In today's decision, the Manitoba Court of Appeal ruled that there was an error by the judge in Mr. Grant's trial. Candace's mother, Wilma Dirksen, spoke to reporters from her home in Winnipeg earlier today.
I think the shock is there. I think we expected all kinds of things, but not a retrial. We thought the first trial was complete and satisfactory, and so we're kind of shocked and in chaos. I think there's a kind of comedy or tragedy and comedy about it. It's just, yeah, it's tough. I think we wanted closure. We were hoping for closure. I was thinking the answer would come. Well, we were already working in the euphoria that was ended. And now to think that it might take another 2 years, 2015, seems like a long ways away. And we just, yeah, it's just another agenda on top of ours that just seems unreal and in some ways unfair. But we do understand that the process has to work, and we want the process to work. I wish that I could believe that there was real grounds, you know. It just seems such a fruitless technology that just doesn't make sense to us at this point. But yet, you know, we're glad there. Everyone's taking such care, I think.
That was Wilma Dirksen, the mother of Candace Dirksen. Candace was killed in 1984 when she was 13. Wilma Dirksen was speaking to reporters today about the court decision ordering a new trial for the man convicted of murdering her daughter. That is the chorus of a song called Mirabeau Bridge by Toronto singer-songwriter Sam Larkin. Sam Larkin died on Monday after a prolonged struggle with liver cancer. He was just 69. Mr. Larkin never became a household name, but he did influence a number of high-profile musicians, including Ron Sexsmith. We reach Mr. Sexsmith in Toronto.
Ron, first of all, I'm sorry for the loss of your friend.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, you know, Sam was a friend to so many of us, you know, from this Fat Albert scene, you know, that a lot of my songwriter pals came up in, you know, the open stage.
You want to tell us about the Fat Albert scene?
Well, Fat Albert's was an open stage that took place every Wednesday in the basement of the Bloor Street United Church. And you had to get there about 7 to sign up. And sometimes you'd have about 30 or 40 performers, you know, everyone doing 2 songs, you know. But that was, you know, when I first moved to Toronto in 87, that's where I would go. And I saw Sam Larkin there and Bob Snyder and, you know, other people who would go on to be, you know, very influential to me. There was something really special about the church, you know. It was kind of dark and, you know, you could smoke in there and, you know, they had coffee and, I don't know, it just felt like a proper coffee house.
The musician David Baxter, yeah, he wrote a little tribute to Sam Larkin. He said he described him as a beautiful guy with beautiful songs. Can you tell us what you know about, he's a bit of a mystery,
yeah,
Sam Larkin is.
Well, that's the perfect word for him, really, is mystery, because I've always found him very mysterious. I mean, Sam Larkin isn't even his real name, you know. I mean, over the years, I would, you know, pick up different things that, I think he told me once he was actually from St. David's, Ontario, which is just down the road from where I grew up in St. Catharines. You know, and I think his name was Dennis, but I'm not sure of his last name. But
does anyone know what his, I mean,
I'm
obviously
sure
it must
probably
be some people.
There's probably more knowledgeable people you could be talking to, but, you know, I just always knew him as Sam Larkin, and, you know, he was just such a great guy, you know. I mean, he had this beautiful smile, you know, and a very warm individual, you know, and he'd never really talk much about himself, you know. But he had a lot of kind words to say about what other people were doing, and it was just, you know, eye-opening to hear, you know, his songs, and it just made me kind of work harder at my songs, because, you know, in St. Catharines, I didn't know really any other songwriters until I got to Toronto, and I really felt, wow, I need to do my homework, you know, just everybody's is just so good here, and but, you know, he, along with Bob Snyder and Kip Harness, were, I always called him the holy trinity of songwriters, you know.
The songs are beautiful. I mean, there's Sally On and Murmurings, and there's one I think you just did a cover for yesterday. This is Mirabeau Bridge.
Yeah, that's probably his most well-known song, and it's such a great song, and I can still, when I think of Fat Albert's, I think of him playing that one and the whole place singing along with him, you know. And that was really special. It's got one of the greatest sing-along choruses you could ever ask for.
Do you want to tell people the words of that chorus?
Well, it's just very simple. It goes, I had a dream and I gave it a name. The name that I gave it was your name. And it's just beautiful, you know. And, you know, and you'd kind of aspire to write something like that. And but I used to do quite a few of his songs. I did this one called Laughing Tears, which is a great song, and We Will Be Birds, which is also one that I recorded a few weeks back when I first heard that Sam was sick.
It wasn't just, I mean, he's a classic folk guitar singer and player, but he also always had he always had his harp around his neck. Tell us a bit about his playing.
Well, I think the cool thing about him, you know, because obviously you can find a lot of folk singers with the harmonicas and guitars, and it can get pretty, you know, redundant. And but not with Sam, you know. I think Sam really had his own style, the way he would weave the harmonic in between the verses. You know, it generally it's not something that I enjoy hearing, that combination of sounds. But with Sam, it was just so kind of when it just was kind of liberating.
We're going to hear a bit of that harmonica playing in just a moment. We're going to play we're going to play Sam Larkin performing Sally On. But just do you remember the last time you saw Sam?
Yeah, it was just a few months ago. I was at Bobby Wiseman's release party, and Bob had recorded a song of Sam's on his most recent album. So he had asked me to come down and play on it, and so Sam was there, and I hadn't seen him in a while, and you know, it was really great. We had a nice talk, and I could tell that he wasn't 100%, you know, but I didn't know exactly what was wrong with him or anything. I still don't really. I don't really know all about the details of his health issues. But my only regret that night is that I just played guitar. I would have loved to have sang one of his songs for him because, you know, he's come to see me so many times. And you know, on a few occasions I have performed one of his songs while he was in the audience. And I think he knew how much of a fan I was. And you know, and I know that he was very encouraging about what I was trying to do as well.
Ron, I appreciate you sharing your memories of Sam Larkin with us.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, I'm sure there's other people who knew him better than me, but I just loved him and I loved his music.
So. All right. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Singer-songwriter Ron Sexsmith spoke to us from Toronto about his friend and colleague, I guess, Sam Larkin, who died earlier this week. And this, as Carol mentioned, is Sam Larkin with Sally On.
Steppers on the road entangled. You turn and see the simple man arise. You see his workflow cleanly from confusion. You know that he is covered with his eyes. Sally On, let her but fly where it may. Yeah. Sally On, shake the blackened sky, just breathe in. Sally On is drying you, she walks another way. There's much to be done in the morning. See a rook where he will fly for shelter. He scorns your ribbon roofs and timber hallways. In the morning, damp or windy, he is flying. And he takes his simple task and does it always. Sally On, let the blood fly where it may. Shake the blackened sky, just breathe in. Sally On, to dry you, she walks another way. There's much to be done in the morning. Thank you.
lone lance to rouse you from the fire. Hello, horn to wake you from your bed. Hello, glass to rouse you out of dreams. Water at least to wake you from the dead. Sally on, leather but flower in May. Sally on, shake the blackened sky to breathing. Sally on, to dry you, she walks another way. There's much to be done in the morning. There's much to be done.